In progress.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the May 6th meeting of the Kitsap County Planning Commission. Thank you for attending. We've got a full house tonight. It's the first time we've had everybody here this year. We have two brand new commissioners. We have Ashley Hall. Can you introduce yourself and you'll tell us a little about yourself?
Sure. My name is Ashley Hall. I am third generation South Kitsap. My background's in commercial finance, commercial real estate, affordable housing development, and I currently in civil excavation. Happy to be here and happy to serve Kitsap County.
Wonderful. South Kitsap, Caleb Nelson.
Thank you, Alan. Caleb Nelson, also South Kitsap native, born and raised, local business owner, very much vibrant part of the community and engaged in this community, and happy to be here and serve. Thank you for having me.
And can we start on the right with introductions?
Jonathan Tudan, South Kitsap.
Adrian Hanton, Central Kitsap.
Rick Shattuck, Central Kitsap.
Alan Beam, Central Kitsap.
Dave Lee, North Kitsap.
Tammy Bowen, North Kitsap.
Aaron, can you say hello?
Yeah, Aaron Murphy having a case of FOMO with everybody there in person. North Kitsap.
Okay. This is a hybrid meeting. Please silence all your electronics during the meeting, and if you're attending in person, please refrain from conversations with the staff or other members. If you wish to provide public comment, we have three methods available. First, for the virtual attendees, raise your hand at the appropriate time using the raise your hand button at the bottom of the screen. Your name will be called and your microphone will be unmuted. Second, call-in attendees can signal by pressing star 9 on their keypad. And the last four digits of the phone number will be called. You will then be connected. You may dial star 6 to unmute your phone. Third, written comments. Testimony can be submitted to the staff or emailed to cjewel@kitsap.gov by 2 p.m. the day prior to the meeting. Please include the date of the meeting for the comments they're meant for, your name, the agenda item you're talking about. Submitted comments will then be entered to the record at the appropriate time. For all speakers, please state your name and the general area in which you live. Comments are normally limited to 2 minutes for the general public. This time is adjustable by the chair if appropriate. First order of business is the adoption of the agenda.
I move to adopt the agenda as presented.
Second.
We don't have to vote on that, do we? All in favor? Second item of business is the adoption of the minutes from the 4:15:25 meeting.
I move we adopt the minutes as presented by staff.
I second.
Are there any questions or comments on the minutes? All in favor of approving the minutes as submitted by staff? Done. This opens the first session for general public comments. Is there anybody here in the audience that would like to comment or provide information to us tonight? Seeing none, is there anybody in the online that wishes to make a comment?
Yes, we have Beverly Parsons.
Ms. Parsons.
Thank you. I'm Beverly Parsons from Hansville. I am a member of the Kitsap PROS Plan Review Team and Kitsap Environmental Coalition Team. And we've spent a lot of time reviewing the draft 2025 PROS plan that you'll be looking at today. And we experienced several issues about the clarity of the plan that we wanted to call to your attention. We did send a letter to Claire Jewell for you to see. I hope you have seen that. I'm just here to call attention to that and ask that you look at the details that we provided there. And given the issues that we found about the clarity, we are suggesting that it would be premature to adopt the 2025 PROS plan as drafted. Rather, we would like you to consider having it revised so its goals, policies, and strategies are derived from the PROS chapter in the 2024 comp plan and from the 2018 PROS plan. So we had five different things that we talked about in terms of lack of clarity. And the first one was that the plan itself is not really an update of the 2018 PROS plan as intended, but it seems to be a pretty much of an entirely new plan. The second point is that goals are not clearly defined and they do not align with the Chapter 6 of the comp plan. The third one is that the plan is unnecessarily lengthy with considerable irrelevant information that clouds the focus of the plan, makes it hard to read. We're also concerned about the quality of the data analysis and reporting. And finally, this is the first time that the public is seeing a draft of this plan, and it seems inappropriate for the public not to have seen this at earlier stages, as is being done with the Year of the Rural document. And the document's very attractive on the surface, but we would treat it more as about a 60% developed draft. So if you would take that into account and consider our suggestion about its revision. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Any other affirmative comments? I see no one else raising their hand. With that, further comments from him on the floor? We'll close the first session of general comments. That brings us to the work study, parks and recreation, open space plan.
Good evening, commissioners. My name is Alex Wisniewski. I'm the parks director for Kitsap County. And I'm here tonight with Carmen Smith, who's the parks planner. We are going to tag team a presentation walking through the Parks, Recreation, and Open Space Plan with you this evening. We were before you a couple weeks ago doing a high-level, just an introduction to it, and we're going to get into more of the details this evening, starting with what the PROS plan is, some of the context of what is in the PROS plan, the processes that we went through for public engagement and system evaluation, resulting with goals, objectives, and capital improvement projects. At that point, Carmen's going to take over and walk through the public comment period that we began in February and where that has landed us today with the comments coming in and updates to the plan that we have before you this evening. Okay, so a couple of the same beginning points that I referenced at the meeting a couple weeks ago. PROS plan stands for Parks, Recreation, and Open Space Plan, and the what is it? It is a high-level strategic plan for the department. It projects out at least 20 years, but really is backs into a six-year strategic plan. We are required by the state of Washington to update this plan every 6 years. It is the goals and objectives become the guide for policy development and departmental decisions that we are making internally, and the capital projects that come out of it basically become the guide to developing our rolling six-year capital improvement plan. What is it for? The PROS plan meets the requirements of the Growth Management Act. It also meets requirements for Kitsap County and our department specifically to be eligible for grant opportunities through the Recreation and Conservation Office, which is a state of Washington office. And The last item on there is, I always like to say, it's just good practice to update these plans on a regular basis, to engage with the community, to ensure that what we are developing and putting forth matches and is in alignment with community demands and needs. So what is in it? There are specific requirements that are called out in manual number 2 from the Recreation and Conservation Office. These 6 elements that are on the screen, the goals and objectives, inventory analysis, public involvement, demand and need analysis, the capital facilities plan, and then the adoption process, basically are the basis of the different chapters within the plan. So what we have on the screen here is basically a cover sheet that references the different information that are bullet pointed that are called out in the inventory and analysis chapter. This chapter at a very high level took a look at all the elements that make up Kitsap County, from its physical context to the demographic of the population here, looking at doing the analysis of our existing parks and recreation facilities, including the conditions of our park facilities, as well as the parks, as well as their geographic distribution, and doing a park condition assessment as a component of that, and looking at how we function, how the Parks Department fits within the context of county government. Did an analysis of our staffing levels, as well as some of our other operational programs. We have the public involvement. What we have up here, this slide is unlike the one previous, where those bullet points reference the different components that were within this chapter. What we have up here instead for public involvement is basically a review of the different types of engagement we did with the community throughout the process of developing the PROS plan. There were multiple things kind of happening simultaneously. We had 3 surveys that were. The survey number 1 was premised on engaging the community and finding out, how do you use your parks today? Which parks do you visit? What type of barriers are there that prevent you from visiting your parks? When you go to your parks, which kind of activities do you participate in? And so it was provided a very base level layer of data for us that from that led into the development of building out the questions that ended up in the second survey, which was more about the projection of the future of the Parks Department and asking the community what it is that you desire within your Parks Department, how do you want to see it in the future, what are those type of needs and demands that we are not currently meeting that we need to pivot or migrate to. That dovetailed into the third survey, which took a lot of that information and boiled it down to specific capital projects. And that is one of the last slides we have on here tonight for you. But while all of this was taking place, the 3 surveys, and this took place over about 6-month period, there were other things that were happening simultaneously. We had stakeholder interviews where we reached out to a variety of different community groups who are regular operators within the Parks Department and use our facilities for various programs and such, to have one-on-one conversations with them to get their feedback. We had public open houses. We had 3 public open houses, one in North, Central, and South. This was in conjunction and synced up with the second survey, so that when the second survey came out about the visioning of the future of parks and where do you want certain elements to be, we could not only do that through the survey, but we also had tabling events where We had big maps laid out, and we invited folks to come in and help share their thoughts, their vision, the new types of recreation activities and elements that they wanted, and where they wanted them, where there were problems that they knew about, and we could draw it right on a map. We had some other tabling events. We put out a youth survey specifically through the school districts, and we had a variety of presentations at various levels of development of the Parks Recreation Open Space Plan throughout its creation, throughout the 23-24 time period. The demand and need analysis section starts to take some of that information, that analysis of our existing system and understanding from the public engagement about what is working well and where we're not hitting the mark with regards to public comment, and starts to create some of what are we hearing, how does this guide us, is this turn into a specific project, does it lead us more in the direction of creating goals and objectives that can help drive and guide policy development. And there are a variety of information included in this. These bullet points are straight from the PROS plan. The other item of note, the level of service demand and need, the last couple bullet points there, reference the LOS levels from the capital facilities plan that the county has. And so we're doing the evaluation to see where our metrics are for the for projected population growth, where we might need more parks, how many more, what type of parks, and other types of facilities. The next couple sections, and so those were very high level reviews of those specific chapters, and that's because there was a lot of action happening there, a lot of evaluation, and where those led us was to the next two chapters, which we're going to go through in a little bit more detail. This next one is goals and objectives, and these, I like to say, these are kind of the outcomes of the PROS plan. The first three chapters I went over is a lot of input. It's a lot of data gathering. It's a lot of evaluation, and that leads us into these the goals and objectives chapter and the capital improvement plan. And I'm going to take a look at each of the draft proposed goals. We have six goals that came out of the PROS process. Within each goal, there's a number of objectives, and you can see here this has six different objectives. And for each objective, there are actions called out in the plan, too, for how to implement those. We, for the sake of space, did not share all of that information, but it is in the plan, which I hope you've had time to take a look at. But for the sake of today, kind of walking through each of the goals, and the goals we had organized differently from the 2018 plan, and we did this purposefully. We changed the way that the goals were organized so that they matched and synced up with our department operations. Within our department, we have a natural resources division, we have a maintenance and operations division, we have an events and marketing division, and we have administration division and planning and capital. And so we synced up the goals to match the way that our department functions so that we could more easily track them and implement them on an annual basis when we're developing work plans, and we are creating action goals for staff. Goal number one here is promoting a sustainable park system, fosters opportunity for both active and passive recreation, encouraging healthy lifestyles, safeguard natural habitats, preserves and enhances significant environmental historical resources. This one was a very systematic, system-wide goal, and the objectives that fall in here are not specifically aligned with one of those parks divisions or parks programs. And so this kind of more aligns with admin that crosses over the entire department and how it functions. So this is where we ended up. Goal number two, very natural resource focused for our natural resource program. Develop and implement natural resource management plans to protect biodiversity and cultural resources, establish buffer zones and wildlife corridors, adopt sustainable land management practices, preserve cultural heritage sites through interpretive signage, education programs, and collaboration with local tribes and cultural experts. A couple of objectives that go with this and various action items that sync up with each of those objectives. And this very much aligns with the functionality of our Natural Resources Division within the Parks Department. Goal number three is aligning our planning division and our capital projects. This is about integrating sustainable design into how we develop parks, how we plan, so into park planning and development to minimize environmental impact, enhance resource efficiency by incorporating green infrastructure, adopting native landscaping, and implementing energy efficient practices. Goal number four crosses a bunch of different programs, similar to the first one, but this is about visitor experiences and enhance visitor amenities and services to improve accessibility overall experience by upgrading trail signage, expanding parking accessibility features, and implementing technology for better engagement. So this one crosses the entire department as well. Goal five, very focused on our events and our those type of facilities, not specific to athletics, though they're called out here, but enhance event and athletic facilities by upgrading and maintaining infrastructure, implementing efficient management operations, exploring revenue-generating operations to attract regional events and support local recreation programs. Our department has a ton of recreation-based facilities as well as rental buildings for community events that get hosted at the fairgrounds. We have community buildings and outlying parks. We have tons of athletic fields and other opportunities that we help promote the community coming together and in making connections. That's what goal five is about. And goal six, firmly focus on maintenance and operations. Ensure high standards in parks M&O by establishing standardized management practices, effectively allocating resources to sustain park facilities and natural settings. If we build it, got to take care of it. And moving into the last chapter, which is focused on the capital improvement plan. And these are the specific projects that that we heard from the community that are part of that existing system analysis, understanding the condition of our facilities and where we need to invest funds to maintain these facilities, replace them, and or add new facilities where we're missing the mark, where we aren't quite meeting community demand. So some examples, and this is not 100% of all of the projects that are in the plan that are in this table, but we grabbed some of the top ones for each of the different categories here. And so this category in the green is trails, trailheads, parking, and access. And then within here, these are the type of projects that rose to the top out of our third survey, the Capital Improvement Projects Survey, and identifying the specific park improvement projects that fit this category. So a lot of improving parking and access, creating barrier-free, wheelchair-friendly trails in a variety of parks. and a lot of parking, because we do have quite a few facilities that don't have developed parks or developed parking lots. And so being able to invite folks to come enjoy those parks is at least at the very start and end, providing safe opportunities for folks to access. So the next three slides are focusing on recreation facilities. This one is in North Kitsap, and they're separated by each district because there were so many that we heard in terms of park projects that we separated them out by district to be able to track them a little bit easier. So in district number one, new park area at the north end of Port Gamble Forest Heritage Park may include a variety of different features there. We've got picnic shelters at Port Gamble as well. There are some things like ADA accessible inclusive style playgrounds where we don't have a specific location targeted. It is TBD. But man, this rose up in all three of the different districts as a desired facility that we currently don't have. So this is an example of a way that we are not meeting the need of the community, but the community is definitely voicing to us that this is desired. And so what this does is it gives us data and grounding to look for locations where these type of facilities might be best suited. And so that we can provide this community need. More playgrounds, picnic shelters, fishing pier, pickleball courts at a variety of different parks and locations. District number three in Central Kitsap, we find restrooms rise up. This is another one that goes hand in hand with parking lots, is generally where we would locate the restrooms so that you have that kind of formal trailhead experience. We also have a lot of parks that lack a lot of comfort facilities. And so we do hear a lot that people can't or don't want to visit our parks because they can't stay very long because we lack the ability to provide those comfort solutions. So investing in those in various different parks is certainly a way that we can enhance the park system. There's a little bit more on District 3. District 2 in South Kitsap, you find very similar things in terms of park renovation, improving restrooms, more ADA accessible inclusive playgrounds, and improving soccer fields with artificial turf, that's all parks. Pursue acquisition of parcels, improve equitable access. This gets at the geographic distribution of our parks and looking for areas where we have park deserts, so to speak, and we are not serving segments of the community, that those would be areas that might rise up as for future acquisitions. Another category were safety projects and enhancements. So those type of projects we heard from the community that were focused on some level of safety concern. And some of the solutions here are pretty obvious, such as adding a handrail to the bluff stairs at Point No Point, pretty darn specific as to what needs to be done. While there are others that you see on here in repetition where there's just some general comments about improving safety measures to reduce crime at different parks. And so how we would approach that, since it's not very specific in each park, what this means is slightly different. Some parks it could be we just need safety lights. People can't see around when the lighting gets low. Could be adding lights to ball fields to extend play. Or it could be working in partnership either, you know, with park host program or others to provide longer and more active presence in the parks to help prevent unwanted activity from being there and being able to report it when it does happen. more safety projects and enhancements. And conservation and landscape resilience. So this is looking at some of the projects that are not about developing recreation facilities, but about improving our natural resources and effectively managing our wildlife habitats in a better way. And that comes across in a variety of different things that does have an impact on the recreation component as well as human access, such as creating bridges over waterways on some of the trails. At Guillemont, we have a bridge that would be helpful to have to cross over an estuary in a better way than it currently is. And I'm going to hand it over to Carmen now to walk us through the next segment of what took place earlier this year.
Thank you, Alex. Good evening, everybody. Again, my name is Carmen Smith, a parks planner. So I'll be talking about the public comment period and then corresponding edits the department has made to the plan. We had a five-week public comment period for the plan. The draft plan was released February 10th. Open to the public, and that we closed that says March 16th, which was a Sunday. We really closed it March 17th, early in the morning on that Monday. Comments were received via online form. The department created a Cognito form, which had the pros. It had a box broken down by each of those chapters that Alex just went through, and an opportunity for folks to provide a open comment on each of however many of the topics they wanted to. And so we received 447 total comments. We also received comments via community meetings. During that public comment period, we held three community meetings, one in each district, to give a very similar presentation to what you all received tonight and advertise the plan is out, go visit the website, go provide comments, dig into it. So we were also able to capture some verbal comments and written comments. We had comment cards at those meetings as well for folks that attended. Our Parks Advisory Board is another opportunity for some folks to provide comments. We gave the PAB a similar presentation as well during the public comment period. And then lastly, a few folks did email comments in directly. So. These charts just kind of show a distribution of the public comments we received. So the chart there on the left-hand side is by source, so not surprisingly, the online form captured the majority of the comments. That is really where we were directing folks to go. It was the main way, so almost 90% of the comments came in that way. Another good chunk, 10% roughly, came in via those community meetings and then smaller amounts via email and the PAB meeting. So really the online form was the bulk of the comments we received. And I should also mention that out of the 447, many of those comments were multifaceted. They touched on a lot of different topics. So on our comment spreadsheet that's on the website, it looks way more than 447. Just tried to break them out based on the number of topics. On the right-hand side is by district. So we broke it down. For the comments that we knew where they were coming from, it was an option on the online form to indicate which district you lived in. So almost half came from South Kitsap, and then another third or so from North Kitsap. 6% roughly from unknown, or they were outside of the county, so they just didn't provide where the comment was. And then lastly, 15% from Central Kitsap. Okay, so now we're going to walk through some of the major themes from the comments. So starting there at the top left, athletic facilities. This was the comment theme or topic we received the most comments about. And this was really primarily focused on support for athletic field improvements. You saw in the capital improvement program slides, artificial turf projects and lighting soccer field improvements. So this was really focused on the comments we received primarily from South Kitsap and primarily focused on soccer fields, but there were other comments from Central and North Kitsap, but really the bulk was focused on parks like South Kitsap Regional and Veterans Memorial and wanting to adjust the priority of where that we're targeting those projects. So from the 6+ year to the 1 to 6 year time span. We also did receive a number of comments about just concerns over environmental health or human health impacts from artificial turf. So the next one there is projects, which is kind of a catch-all for project-related comments. So we heard support for pickleball projects, for restroom projects, which as you saw on the preceding slides, definitely a number of restroom projects throughout the county and park system. And then also support for land acquisition. There was also a desire for particular park planning efforts at a number of parks were mentioned, Coulter Creek Heritage Park, for example, South Kitsap, Norwegian Point, as well as Wicks Lake received attention about wanting some park efforts and wanting to see some activity happen at those parks. There was also, and if you've had a chance to look into the PROS plan, you'll see that the capital section, that big table that we shared the screenshots from, is really long. It's really lengthy. I think it spans about 7 pages in the PROS plan, so there's no shortage of projects in there. And so we received some comments about concerns over prioritization. How is the department going to prioritize these projects, and how is the department going to get all of these projects done? Next, on communication and engagement, we received some comments concerned over the department's volunteer program and if any changes happening to the volunteer program, part of the PROS plan update. Folks also expressed concerns over not having enough time to review the PROS plan in that 5-week public comment period, noting lengthy, complicated document, didn't feel like there was enough time to review. And then we also got some suggestions for how we can improve engagement in the future, different groups we could reach out to, or just different ways to advertise opportunities for engagement. Natural resources there on the right-hand side. There were comments about supporting wildlife and habitat protection, invasive species removal, noxious weed removal. And folks appreciated seeing the focus on natural resources in the PROS plan and the direction for the department to develop natural resource management plans for those parks that are managed for conservation, as well as folks also expressing concern over overuse of parks and damage to parks as a result of overuse, particularly in some of the more natural area parks. Moving along to plan contents and organization, there were concerns over changes from the 2018 PROS plan, that this plan represented a departure from the 2018, as well as a number of grammatical or typo errors, which we have cleaned up in the revised draft that you have. And then also comments about the plan, being a pretty lengthy document, repetitive at times, containing some unnecessary information. So kind of some clarity and organization comments about the plan. Safety and maintenance was another big topic we received comments about. And these comments were primarily focused around rule enforcement, and specifically focused on off-leash dogs or speed limits on trails in our parks, as well as graffiti, pieces like that. And then also some concerns over trail safety and multi-user conflicts in the parks and on trails. Park classifications, we will touch more on in later slides, but we received kind of a mixed comments here. Some folks concerned over the changes to the park classification. So in a nutshell, the proposed 2025 plan proposes to update park classifications from the current state. And park classifications are a way for our department to organize and group parks that have similar use, that are of similar size, that are drawing a service area, and similar amenities, and not on their own dictating management or what uses are going to be allowed in particular parks. So we received a number of comments related to our The intent with the park classifications update was to align what our classifications are with industry standards. So if you look at jurisdictions in Kitsap County, but also across the country, how do they group their parks? Kitsap County currently has a pretty unique park classification structure that not a lot of or any really other jurisdictions use. So the PROS plan was an opportunity to align those classifications, and that helps us compare ourselves to other jurisdictions, as well as looking at trying to ensure an equal distribution of different park types across the county. So on one hand, there were concerns over moving towards a more standard model, but then the other folks expressed support for the park classification update. Lastly, I just want to call out support of plan. It's always good to highlight. There were a number of comments that noted a thoughtful, inclusive plan. Folks felt like it represented or addressed the needs of their community, and they appreciated the opportunity to be able to provide comment on the plan and are looking forward to seeing implementation from the plan. Okay, now switching gears to edits. So after the public comment period ended, staff made a number of edits based on what we heard from the community, but also edits that we were aware of that needed cleaned up. So we kind of grouped them into these four major categories you see on the screen here. So housekeeping, pretty straightforward stuff. We corrected a lot of typos, formatting errors. If there were mislabeled park names or mislabeled figures, cleaned up table of contents, that kind of stuff. Replaced some pictures that were either duplicates or were blurry. Just updated any information that was incorrect. Additions and clarifications, or a number of edits that we made here to try to help bring some clarity based on some of the comments we were receiving. There was an Appendix X. There was a mislabeled reference to an Appendix X in the plan that didn't exist in the appendices that was published, so provided that and clarified in the plan. We also added differences between the 2018 PROS plan and this PROS plan, so we called that out in the plan. We added some clarification around those park classifications that I was just discussing, and tried to break out more of the park classifications purpose and how we use that versus what our park planning process is that Alex mentioned a little bit in that goal 3 that was about park planning and environmental impacts assessments. We added information that based on existing maintenance and management contracts that the department currently has for facilities and parks. We just updated the outreach, tried to clean that up a little bit, where we had clearly listed all the groups that participated in those interviews, made sure they all were in the table and they all had a corresponding summary of what we heard from those interviews, and that aligned with the appendix. We also added some actions in the plan to increase safety and reduce recreational conflicts. That was based on the comments we were hearing about those user conflicts and trail safety concerns. Capital projects, number of changes here as well. As I mentioned, we received a lot of comments about athletic fields and urging those particular parks to be bumped up to a higher priority. So we did that for Veterans Memorial, for South Kitsap, and for Anderson Hill project. So all of the field improvement projects moved from the 6+ year target to the 1 to 6 year target. We also added improvement projects to the two golf courses that the Parks Department owns, Village Greens and Rolling Hills golf courses, to be able to capture improvements that are necessary at those facilities. We added energy improvement projects across all districts to help improve energy efficiency in our facilities. We also added projects for land acquisition, both to help improve equitable access to parks and recreation facilities, but also for conservation value. And we added improvement projects at Suquamish Parks. So one of the things we did for the PROS plan was we looked through the 2024 comprehensive plan, including the sub-area plans, and pulled any projects that were captured in those sub-area plans and made sure they were on our radar and documented in our plan as well. So that included a number of project improvement projects in Suquamish. We also heard from the SCAC about those projects as well, so we added them to our improvement or our capital section. And then last note here on projects, we just removed any projects that were duplicate or had already been completed. There were a couple of those, which is great, or any projects that were erroneous. Just cleaned that up as well. And then lastly, in the appendices, we made a few edits around adding definitions for all of the park classifications, making sure those were all there. Again, trying to add clarification around park classification and park planning process. We added in all the comments that we received during the 5-week public comment period, as well as the staff responses to all of those, and an updated engagement tracker, which has all the engagement opportunities that we've done throughout, not only the plan development process, but also the public comment as well. So that is all up to date in the appendices. And we combined the three public survey results. They were each broken out as a separate document in the appendices, and we just rolled them into one. So cleaning that up and just making sure it's up to date and accurate with all of the engagement efforts so far. Okay, so now moving towards more of the process and looking forward a bit, we also reviewed the 2025 PROS plan update alongside the 2024 comprehensive plan for consistency. Our department reviewed that and sent it to Department of Community Development for review of our review. So that has all been completed. DCD indicated that there were no conflicts found between the two plans, and the two plans are in alignment. Also related to DCD, we applied for a programmatic SEPA determination. The DCD issued a determination of non-significance, a DNS, on April 29th that was published. So we are in the public comment period for the SEPA determination right now. That ends next Tuesday on the 13th. Of course, we have the Planning Commission process that we are in right now. So we're at the work study. We'll be back before you in a couple weeks for the public hearing. So we're also in the public hearing, public comment period right now. So that was noticed yesterday on the 5th, and that will run through the 20th. So we are going to be capturing comments there from SEPA and then any other public hearing comments. From there, we will move to the Board of County Commissioners for their process and adoption. And then the last step for us here is the Washington State Recreation and Conservation, or RCO, approval. So again, that's the state office that has the requirement that these plans are updated every 6 years in order to remain grant eligible. So that is really important for us to be able to have access to. They have a large grant program that we would like to take advantage of on those capital projects that you've seen. Lastly, this slide was in your presentation a couple weeks ago, but we have updated it to have the, I believe we broke out deliberations and findings of fact there. So that is the main change. The public hearing will be there on May 20th, and then we'll be back on June 3rd for deliberations, and then again on June 17th for findings of fact. So just wanted to call your attention to that we did have a schedule change with the Planning Commission. And then we'll be moving on, like I said, to the board and then ultimately to RCO. So I'll go ahead and pause there for any questions, comments from Planning Commission. Thank you.
Thank you both, Alex and Carmen, for that great presentation. I have a couple questions. I don't know who would want to answer it, but so maybe if I could get some clarification on I know there might have been some changes with regards to the volunteer program, and I know there was a stewardship program before. Can you kind of explain some of those changes? And then secondly, when we're talking about trail access, I liked how you said, like, when you build something, you have to maintain it. I like the idea of trail access, but we're not planning a lot of hardscaping in some of the heritage parks or anything like that, are we, with regards to trails?
Most of the trails that we manage are earthen trails, but we do have trails that vary in size and scope, from your single track 12-inch wide earthen trail to your urban classification, which is a 10 to 12 foot wide paved trail. There are some of these in the county's ownership. Clear Creek is an example of them. We don't have any currently that I can think of in our department inventory currently. In terms of the volunteer program, the stewardship groups are underneath the volunteer program umbrella. They're a component of that. We don't make any reference to eliminating stewardship groups. We are moving in a direction that will operate our volunteer program differently than it's been in the past, but there will still be volunteer opportunities for ongoing maintenance, whether that be trail brushing or pulling of non-native invasive weeds. We currently do all of this now. There will also be opportunities to participate in planning efforts when we're doing specific projects for parks, where we will likely pull together steering committees and look to draw on regular volunteers from specific parks to help participate in that. So I think that the volunteer activities will remain the same, but the way that the program functions is differently. Ultimately, that is just a day-to-day operational, how the department functions. A little bit different than, the PROS plan doesn't get down to that level of weeds in terms of how we function on the daily basis. It provides, in the goals and objectives, there's a lot of opportunity called out in there and direction for volunteers and volunteer opportunities for, expanding on the trail work, utilizing volunteers to assist with things like trails, with non-natives, with creating a docent program and doing other types of public outreach. So that doesn't go away. There's nothing called out specifically in the PROS plan that says we are eliminating a facet of volunteerism.
Thank you very much.
It's a great list of capital projects. I mean, it's really impressive. But, of course, it's too impressive, right? There's much more that can be done, given the resources available. So, we're looking at county roads. We have the program. We have, here's the priority 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and a cutoff, and saying here's where we think our money's going to go. Is there another process other than the PROS process where we're looking at setting priorities, balancing among commissioner districts and those sorts of things that isn't part of this plan?
In short answers, it does not exist yet. Parks Department does not have a process or a mechanism that prioritizes one project over the other. But we are in the process right now of creating that. So it is definitely something that we recognize as a gap in our operations that we're looking to correct, to fix. And Carmen will be pulling together a subcommittee of our Parks Advisory Board to begin work on that process. And she's already started doing research.
So that was the question, is the entity that's kind of community entity is the Parks Advisory Board will be working with the staff to put that together then?
Correct.
Thank you so much for the presentation. I have two questions and a comment, so lengthy one here, thanks all. My first question is around data interpretation. So I'm so curious how the themes from the comments that you received turned into the actions that are included in the plan. So there's the goals, objectives, and then the actions. And I actually think that's probably one of the best parts of the plan, describing what we're going to do because of what you said. So What was like methods approach that you used to get from the themes to then, okay, what can we do about it?
So that was all developed by the consultant. So we did not do the data analysis ourselves at the staff level. We had a hired consultant for the last couple of years, year and a half, who really led the process of doing the public engagement, doing the data analysis, and coming out of it with the themes as well as the goals and objectives and the capital projects.
And then one quick follow-up on that. So is the idea that the capital projects also align with the goals in the plan? And is it possible to outline that?
Yeah, we don't have the projects synced up hyper-specifically with the goals, but there is a lot of overlap. There's within the goals and objectives, there's call out for need of, you know, facility improvements, for the need of habitat improvements on the natural resource side of things, for expanded opportunities for being more inclusive in terms of access to the parks, which leads towards parking lots and better trailheads, as well as ADA accessible trails and inclusive playgrounds. So there's some overlap, but there's not like a hard line that gets drawn between the projects and the goals.
Yeah, I can appreciate that. Okay, so my second question is, I'm a big fan of SMARTY goals for those who are familiar with SMARTY goals. So, you know, specific, measurable, actionable, all that good stuff. In the capital project table, it has, you know, can this happen between year 1 and 6 or 6+? And I'm curious if a similar table exists for the actions that are also included in the plan, if that's feasible to do.
That's an interesting comment. We don't. There's nothing called out in the plan that's specific to that, but we have, I mean, we could take a look at doing something like that. We'd have to do it for the actions themselves. But we fully intend to, and we've had discussions at the staff level about utilizing those goals and objectives to every time we are doing our monthly presentations to the commissioners or whatever it is, that we are drawing back the actions that we're doing, the programs or policies we're updating to sync them up with the goals and objectives called out in the pro. So it becomes a working document and not just a fancy plan that sits on a shelf.
Right. My assumption was there's probably like an Excel spreadsheet of the work plan, you know, behind the scenes somewhere. So I appreciate that. Thank you. And then my comment was around goal 2. So goal 2 is great in that it speaks to the significance of culture, but I didn't necessarily see it reflected as an objective. And I think just to call that out directly as an objective would be great. I feel it might be couched under conservation stewardship, but I think as its own objective, that could be very, fairly powerful. So just a recommendation there.
Thank you. Thank you.
Aaron, do you have any comments?
No, I'm good. Thank you.
Yeah, just to piggyback on what Adrian was just mentioning, I didn't actually see any of that signage called out in the projects anywhere either for the signage about interpretation and where those projects are going to be in the plans, you know.
Yeah, I don't. I know that we've got interpretive signage called out in the goals and objectives as in some fashion. I don't know it specifically. I don't think that we call out interpretive signage as a capital project specifically, but it would be one of those things that we would incorporate into a park development project in the right location. So I think that's how we would carry it out. It's kind of a lower dollar project, so it probably wouldn't rise up on its own to say interpretive signage.
Any other comments? I have one quick one. How do you measure success? How do you look at this and say we've done this, we need to do that? Is there any monitoring program here to measure how successful you are in accomplishing your goals?
Other than internal tracking of the, actually coming back to a comment Commissioner over here said, about the carrying out the actions as well as tracking the capital improvement projects that get completed, I think those would be two ways of taking a look at, are we leaning into what the community is telling us they want? Are we creating goals and objectives and operational changes that are in alignment with the what went into that goals and objectives chapter, as well as, you know, are we completing projects that, that the community said that they wanted?
So this would be like an annual report? Of here, we mean, this was our list, this is where we are, this is where we're going?
Could be, yes. I've not seen that done before, but that's a great idea.
Other comments? Sir?
Obviously a lot in the PROS plan and of past, and during the public engagement that you did in February being here, a piece that was mentioned was staffing for a lot of this, having enough hands to be able to tackle these projects and these lists, on top of obviously other resources and grant money. Is there, looking at just the upper quartile amount of park area and acreage that we have far and above anywhere else really in the state, with understaffed essentially, is there a plan for that? Is that a need that's going to be addressed?
A need, absolutely. I mean, we are functioning underwater currently with basically all of the data points targeting or indicating the staffing resources that we should have, either based on basic FTE to acres calculations or more specific, and we've had a maintenance study done recently that's taking a look at staffing hours needed to maintain existing recreation facilities at a certain level, indicates that we are 19 staff members short just in maintenance alone. And so I think that the need is widely recognized, not just within our department, but at, across the county too. The commissioners are in support of our department. The challenge is lining up those resources and that is, you know, always an ongoing conversation. How can we, you know, one, become more efficient and effective with what staffing levels that we have, as well as, you know, can we create partnerships or other ways that are non-staff related to help achieve, you know, X, Y, or Z, whatever it may be, as well as looking at other revenue generating opportunities through, you know, tax initiatives or bond measures or whatever it may be to either help achieve a project or help bring in alternate funding sources for to help us get better staffing levels. So there's no simple or clear-cut answer, but it is always top of mind with pretty much everything that we do. That staff capacity is really important and will be part of that project priority list for when we create the projects. Not only on the how much capacity do we have to complete a project, but also do we have the staff on the backside to maintain the facility afterwards. So as an example, one of our priorities or one of the things we'll be working into that priority list is looking at replacing or upgrading existing facilities before we are adding new facilities, so that we're at least staying kind of status quo with facilities to staff and not going kind of over the edge a little bit more.
No other questions?
Just one more comment, more related to partnerships, and then maybe that could help with communicate in the plan, but just a note on safety and then some of the comments related to homelessness encampments. I just think there could be an opportunity to work with the HART team within the county to maybe help address some of that or even support the language in the plan in that regard, just leading with compassion and, yeah, meeting the need of the comments. So just an additional recommendation there.
Thank you. Well, appreciate yeah. that, yeah. We do work with HART team all the time. They're fantastic.
Thank you very much. It was a very nice brief.
I have one question. Regarding the project categories you list under capital improvement projects, what kind of number, a numeric system, one through all the way up to nine? Where's that? Where's the reference of those categories?
I think there was in the older version of the capital improvement project table. I can't remember if we, I know we tried to simplify it, so it was either saying the number or what it was.
It's not in your handout, is it?
No, it would be in the plan itself, yeah. And I think there, yeah, there was a column for which the project and then a column for what category it was. And so I think it is the number that's in the plan. So like one for land acquisition. So the table ahead of that is just meant to be a key and help describe what that project topic is.
No other comments? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up is the Year of the Rural.
Good evening, Planning Commission. Thank you for having me this evening. I'm here to provide an update on the Year of the Rural project. My name is Heather Cleveland, and I'm a long-range planner with the Department of Community Development. So the agenda today, we will have a guest speaker, Diane Fish from the Kitsap Conservation District, talking about farmland preservation per the request of the Planning Commission. We'll review high level, the Growth Management Act. We'll talk about some rural definitions, the project timeline, and then a summary of the plan comments and the survey summary, an update on our outreach. And then we'll have an update on the three deliverables that are part of the Year of the Rural, which includes rural reclassification requests, the chapter update, and then code updates. So as part of our outreach engagement, from the beginning of this project, agriculture and agricultural land resource was a top priority for us, and with that, we formed an ad hoc agricultural working group steering committee that has been meeting since January and has evolved to involve more of the agricultural community, but the folks represented on that committee who have great networks within themselves includes Kitsap Conservation District, Kitsap Extension, Kitsap Community and Agricultural Alliance, and then Mason Kitsap Farm Bureau Preservation Coalition. Today we have a farmland preservation presentation by Diane Fish from the Kitsap Conservation District, and then a bit about the Kitsap Conservation District, which has been a great partner and provided great feedback and history on agriculture and farming in Kitsap County, which you'll hear more about. But Kitsap Conservation District is a non-regulatory organization working cooperatively with private landowners to address water and soil concerns. They collaborate with farmers, residents, and businesses to work towards conservation goals. And with that, I will hand it over to Diane Fish.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. And I'm going to start the timer on my phone because otherwise I just know that I will struggle with timing. Just one little correction there on the ad hoc members. We do have the Mason Kitsap Farm Bureau, and we have the Kitsap Farmland Preservation Coalition. They are two separate and distinct entities and would probably be a little miffed if I didn't separate them out. So today I'm going to talk a little bit about farming in Kitsap, our past, our present, and perhaps what I hope was going to be our future. This is a picture of the Peterson Farm. Many of you are probably very familiar with it. It's north located just north of Silverdale. It was conserved in 2014 by the Great Peninsula Conservancy, and they recently reacquired the farm following the original, or the first owner of the conserved property. It kind of went sideways a little bit, and they didn't really live up to the initial intent of the conservation easement. But it is preserved as agricultural lands in perpetuity now. And it's 140 acres, and we're really excited about that. Great Peninsula Conservancy has been a really great partner in the process of looking at preserving farmland in Kitsap. They also worked hard to preserve the Bledsoe Farm, which is located at the corner of Pew and Bond Roads. It has now been renamed the Dogfish Creek Collaborative, and our looking forward to transitioning ownership to that property now that it's been conserved to a couple of younger farmers. And so we're excited about that. So they've been really engaged. A couple of other conservation projects in Kitsap that you may be familiar with, and perhaps the parks folks would be, and that's the Schold Farm and the Howe Farm. Both of them have farm in the names, but they're not really being used for farming anymore. And so the real focus of my presentation is, how do we keep farmland in farming and agricultural use? So the Farmland Preservation Coalition that I'm here on, actually in behalf of, because most of these farmers here are farming, and so they're too busy to come tonight. But they were a group of people that came together to really passionate about farmland preservation. And so I just wanted to highlight some of the farmers that are involved with that organization. There's also organizational partners, the district WSU Extension, as well as the WSU Regional Small Farms Program, GPC, obviously, American Farmland Trust, and we should probably have Washington Farmland Trust up there, too, because they've been very helpful and provided us with guidance on a couple of different things. And we basically provide technical assistance for the coalition in looking at, what should you do? We should probably have NRCS up there, too, because we're meeting with them tomorrow at the Peterson Farm to talk about how to get the farm back up and running and get the irrigation going. Okay, so we also have a website, Protect Local Farms. We're protectkitsapfarms.org, I think, is the actual URL, preservekitsapfarms.org. So if you get a chance, go check us out. Sign up for the newsletter. You can also look at some of the beautiful images that we have on the website, highlighting some of the stuff that's going on farms in Kitsap. Another thing that we have put together as part of a coalition, so one of the things that has how this kind of evolved is that there is a group of us that meet as part of the Kitsap Food Systems Roundtable. And we've been meeting since 2018, basically. It's a group of organizations, agencies, individuals, the food banks, the health district, WSU Extension, the district, and several other groups and organizations. And we just talk generally and network around food systems in general. You know, how do we promote farming? Do we look at ways to increase access to food for underserved communities? Those kinds of things. And so one of the things that came out of that is in 2020, I got a postcard about the Ross development. And I'm sure you're familiar with that. It's the former Ross Farm that is now the Royal Valley development. It is at the intersection of Central Valley Road and Wagaway. And it's kind of an ugly scar at this point. It used to be a farm. And we're in the district is right next to it. And so we were within the 800-foot notification. And I was like, oh, my gosh. And I have known since about, 2010, that the zoning change had taken place and it had been incorporated into the urban growth area. But nothing had been happening there. And so we weren't really, like, freaking out about it. And then, of course, obviously, time marched on and the developers actually got to work on it. And so now they're expecting somewhere about 500 units of housing, single family as well as townhouses, as well as 8 apartment complexes. And we have, so we have a lot of neighbors now that are really concerned about that. But I'm like, well, where were you, 20 years ago when they were taking public comment on that? And how could we have perhaps changed the narrative around it? And so a lot of what we're talking about now is how do we look 20 years down the road to make sure that we don't have the same kinds of conversations that we're having right now about, well, that's a farm. It's always been a farm. How do we fix that? So one of the things that we did is the district applied for some money from the USDA Rural Business Development grant. We received funding. It paid for about 5 hours. WSU provided match. So we had about 10 hours. And for the last 2.5 years, we've just kind of been plugging along, providing technical assistance to people in farm businesses, exploring options around farmland preservation, working with new and beginning farmers on land access, and working with farmers who are looking to transition out of farming, and how do we connect them with new and beginning farmers, and so the land stays in farming. And so that's kind of what we've been working on, and as a result of that, we came up with in our hands document. Hopefully you've had an opportunity to at least glance at it. If you don't, I have hard copies with me today. But also it's on the Year of the Rural website. And it provides just really an analysis of where we came from and where we're at now and what are recommendations for us moving forward to see if we can't preserve our existing agricultural lands. And so that's bedtime reading if you're looking if you're having trouble sleeping. So let's talk a little bit about farmland loss. This is Silverdale in 1952. For those of you looking for a point of reference, in the top left-hand corner, that's the farmland feed store right there. And you can see that as you head to the right side of the picture, that is a bunch of small farms. And in fact, if you kept on that road, Silverdale Way, you'd eventually come to Elsie's, which is now M&T, that's located in the parking lot of the Ross Plaza. But you see, it's just a bunch of small farms. It's an incredibly rural landscape. Oops. And here's what it looks like now. In fact, farmland is to the bottom of the picture. It's not even in that. And we have the mall. We have Ridgetop Boulevard. All of you have seen these images because I actually grabbed this one, I think, off the county website. But it really illustrates how much things have changed since, over the last 70 years. And there's a lot of reasons why we have this differing landscape now. But it has certainly changed the face of farming in Kitsap. So how did we get here? Well, we made some decisions. This is a quote. In 1990, when they passed the Growth Management Act, one of the things that they had to do was they had to decide whether or not they were going to zone commercial agricultural land. And I'm not going to make any assumptions about the makeup of the Board of County Commissioners at that time, but I suspect that they were pretty pro-development, and they were pretty excited about the mall and a bunch of that stuff going on, because agriculture had changed pretty substantially since the 1950s and 1960s. But this is a quote. There are very few large commercial agricultural operations remaining in the county. Much of the agricultural production occurs on hobby or UPIC farms. These operations do not generally provide the sole income source. They're secondary or supplemental. While agricultural activities serve other purposes, they contribute to open space, rural visual character. We talk a lot about that in the comp plan process. GMA is quite clear that the designation of agricultural lands is for the purpose of conserving areas that have long-term commercial significance. In 1979, 25,000 acres were still engaged in agriculture here in Kitsap, which amounts to about 10% of our total land mass. I pulled some data. In the WAC, it talks about that basically at the time, there was three main considerations for zoning for agriculture. The first was whether or not it had been characterized by urban development. Obviously, by that time, they built the mall, and even though that's some of the best farmland in the county, it was pretty much paved over. So that was one of the criteria. The second is that it could be capable of being used for agricultural production, so soil types and access to water and those kinds of things. And then it has a long-term commercial significance for agriculture. And so here, we're talking about things in addition to the land, but do we have existing infrastructure that is going to support continued agricultural activity? Tractor dealerships, slaughterhouses, feed stores, those kinds of things. And I was just kind of curious because we started talking with Heather about mapping some stuff in the county, and we were looking at farmland and looking at what the soil criteria were in the RCW and the WAC. We have 8,800 acres of prime farmland in Kitsap County. We have 16,000 and change prime farmland if drained. Many of the areas that we were formerly farmed, including things like the All Press Farm at the intersection of Central Valley Road and Wagga Way, they're a little boggy, but back in the day they drained them. We have 68,592 acres of prime farmland if irrigated. And then the final category is farmland of statewide importance, which accounts for 89,336 acres. That's a total of 183,074 acres. Now, that obviously is inclusive of urban growth areas and incorporated areas, but that represents 72% of all the land in Kitsap County. So clearly, we have the soils, we have the types of things that would enable us to farm. We just didn't really have the will for it. So this is just a little snippet. WSDA did a series of agricultural monographs in the 1950s, and Kitsap was one of the ones that they called them county agricultural data books. And they looked at poultry. And for those of you who are at all familiar with the history of agriculture in Kitsap, we used to be Chicken Central, particularly Silverdale. And so they were looking at the value of poultry and poultry products. This is from the Census of Agriculture, actually. And it's about $800,000, which I did the math on that, and that's about $9.4 million in today's dollars. So that's not an insignificant industry. In 1954, we had 166 dairies in Kitsap County. By 1964, we only had 110. And in 1970, Derigold closed their milk processing plant. Part of the reason that they closed it was because their transportation was a bit of a challenge, and it was much more efficient to process milk in Tacoma or Seattle than it was to process it in Kitsap. Even though we had cutting-edge technology, we had some of the leading technology with regard to milk processing in Kitsap at our milk processing facility. Part of the reason that the Peterson farm ended up raising beef instead of dairy is that Jerry Peterson had a bulk tank that limited him. He had milk that was picked up three times a week. He wanted milk picked up five times a week, and he couldn't get milk picked up, so he couldn't enlarge his herd, so he couldn't make more money, and so he sold the dairy herd and converted it to beef, and that's where it was after about 1975. So I had a conversation with Jim Carlson from Minder Meats the other day, and he said, you know, really what killed us was when we lost a bunch of that infrastructure, particularly from his point of view, it was the loss of the Foss USDA slaughterhouse. And so now people had to drive either to Sumner or go over to Eastern Washington. Right now I think we have six USDA slaughter facilities in the entire state. One of them is, I think it's Tyson that owns it. It's in the Tri-Cities. It is huge. And then there's a few small ones. And we've looked at it as a regional issue that really we need this desperately. But, you know, USDA slaughter is pretty expensive. And so it's a limiting factor for, you know, all of our producers that are looking to produce protein. So good news, bad news. In the 2022 USDA Census of Ag, I mean, we had some good news. We have market value of farm products sold. We were up 105% over the previous 5 years. Our market value of production for farms increased significantly. What I thought was interesting is that we had farms with sales over 25,000 that increased about 300%, which for me means that they've moved from hobby farm status into something more serious, a more serious business. We had 49 farms that reported sales up to 100,000. That is a 700% increase over 2017. We only had six farms at that level. And so obviously people are making a living at farming here, despite the fact that we have many challenges. But in the meantime, we've lost about 15,000 acres of farmland in the last 20 years. And we have only 18 farms over 50 acres remain. We used to have 57 20 years ago. And those bigger farms allow for more diversification. So I did a little math as I was going through the ag census. And I wasn't really completely prepared because I'd never really looked at the long-term data. But I was like, holy cannoli. And what really struck me was average farm size. So from 1 to 9 acres, we saw a 53% increase in the number of farms. And I would have to venture to say that the majority of those are probably 5-acre lots. And we saw a corresponding decrease in the number of 50-acre or more farms. And so if you remember correctly, if any of you have been around here long enough, in the aftermath of the passage of the Growth Management Act, there was a land office rush to get your property divided into minimum parcel sizes. And so I think that's really reflective of something that happened as the result of those land use planning decisions. And, you know, we can't unring the bell on that, but it's still kind of a sobering thing when you think about the fact that we have lost so much in the way of farmland. So, you know, smaller parcels, we've got residential infill, we've got conversion to non-agricultural uses, we've got annexation by cities, you know, looking at Port Orchard here. And, you know, we have inclusion in the UGAs, which is what happened with the Ross parcel based on site-specific zoning. And so, and, you know, the other thing that makes it really challenging is we have a lot of young farmers that are working to farm on smaller parcels. At the district, we have a food bank farm, and we grow on an acre. We do about 25,000 pounds of food, which is worth about $100,000 annually that we donate to the food banks. It's a demonstration farm. And I'll tell you, I mean, it's only an acre, and it's a lot of work. There's two of us that do most of the farming, and it's all we can do to keep up with it. So farming on smaller parcels isn't necessarily a bad thing, but the problem is that our housing costs have doubled in the last 10 years. So new and beginning farmers are really going to struggle. So what do we know? Well, we know our farm, oops, one too many. Farmland's under threat. We've got, you know, a lot of factors that contribute to farmland losses. I mean, let's be honest. When we built the mall, we thought it was going to be really an awesome thing. And, it was an economic driver. It has created this retail center in Silverdale, but it also was, you know, it was farmland. We've tried to stop the conversion of non-farm uses all over the Puget Sound, but we're still losing acreage. We're losing acreage in the state. We're losing farmland nationwide. But if you have goals, policies, and strategies focused on preservation, you can slow down or stop the loss of farmland. And we have new farmers that really need help with land access. And so there's a number of strategies that we can employ to do that. The most effective is land use planning and zoning. Because Kitsap is the only county in the entire state of Washington that does not have agricultural zoning, we have a lot of limitations there because there are things that you can do with regard to zoning in commercial agricultural areas that provide significant protections, and we don't have access to that. Farming is allowed in all rural zones in Kitsap County, but in the last few times that I've sat in commissioners' meetings when we've been having conversations about what the ag code should look like and what we should be doing, neighbor complaints come up a lot. And I think that's a big concern that people have. And so, you know, sometimes farming is a little smelly, a little noisy, a little dusty. But it also feeds us. And so we need to look at those things. Conservation easements and purchase and transfer of development right programs work, but they're not the sole. I mean, we have a Kitsap TDR program, but the only organization that's making that work right now is Waterman Mitigation Partners, and basically what they're using it for is to mitigate wetlands. They're buying parcels to use for wetland mitigation for developments. And so that, you know, we've got to figure out something else to do. Unfortunately, if we have a regional TDR program, we're not going to be able to access it because, number one, you can only transfer, at this point, you can only transfer commercial agriculturally zoned land into a regional TDR program. And most of our parcels are 5 acres, and they don't have a development right to transfer. So that's a significant limitation. We have current use agriculture as a state program. Unfortunately, right now, I think we only have a little over 2,000 acres. I was looking at the assessor's report the other day. You know, we have 9,000 acres of reported farmland, but yet we only have 2,000 acres enrolled in current use for the tax benefits because people aren't well educated in it. It's kind of cumbersome getting into the program. Yeah, there's things. Also, you know, estate planning decisions come into play because it's got to stay in at least 7 years. You need to stay in about 10 years. And so a lot of people don't want to burden their heirs with that. We can provide economic support for farmers. We can support farmers markets, those kinds of things. But we really just have to be committed. We have to have a desire to protect farmland. And sometimes that goes against what people want because people want what they want. So why do we preserve it? Well, obviously, no farms, no food. We noticed during COVID that if we have disruptions in our food distribution networks, pretty soon people are like not able to find things on the shelves in grocery stores, and that makes people pretty twitchy. But also it's an engine of economic development. It creates jobs. It keeps money in local communities. I ran the numbers on a buy local valuation impact calculator, and just the $13 million that was generated in the previous five-year period, if we were to like come up with like a buy local food campaign or something similar to that, it could result in an additional $20 million in economic activity in Kitsap, which is not inconsequential. It does provide us some tax revenue. It requires little back. So there's a program called Cost of Community Services, and basically it's a calculation about how much does it cost for us to support an acre in an urban or developed area versus an acre in a rural area. And they did some looking in Skagit. I think the last numbers were from 2016. In residential development, the cost of community services for those parcels, those one-acre parcels, is about $1.25 an acre. And that's borne by the, you know, the community tax base. Farmland and ag and open space costs 51 cents an acre. So it's a good deal for taxpayers. If they provide ecosystem services, they clean air, they provide pollinator, they, you know, pollinator and wildlife habitat. We've got ecological biodiversity. They did some studies looking at ecosystem services in Pierce, and they estimate that the ecosystem benefit provided by farmland and open space is somewhere between $860 million and $2.9 billion annually. So it's not inconsequential. But we don't necessarily see that in our pocketbook, in our bottom line, in our county budget. But it's there and it's real. So what would we like to see? Well, we invite you to get to know your local farmer. Go to a farmer's market this summer. Buy from a local farmer. Purchase a CSA. Go on the farm tour. It's the it's August 10th, and it's all over the county, so wherever you live, you should be able to find a farm. It's the open farm days from 10 to 4. And as you are like evaluating the land use and planning and policy decisions that you're going to be making and recommending to the Board of County Commissioners over the next 6 to 8 months, evaluate those policies through the lens of preserving these working landscapes during the Year of the Rural and beyond, because they're going to make a difference. And that's it. Do you have any questions?
That slide that you have up right now, that appears to be a nursery. I'm just wondering if non-food production, agriculture like Christmas tree farms and nurseries, is that included in your data as farms?
Yeah, it is. Actually, that's a flower farm in North Kitsap. That's Stacy Marshall's place. Now, I would say that any use that is not a Walmart preserves landscapes for the biological, the ecological benefits, as well as for potential food production. She does grow some crops as well, but this just happens to be her flower field. It's a very pretty picture. One of the things the district does every year is we do windshield surveys of every watershed, and we have an ongoing survey process. And so we do a couple watersheds a year, and basically we drive down the roads and we look at the parcels and say, is there farming? What's going on there? And so we have identified all of the parcels in Kitsap County that, and it'll be part of the mapping project that's part of the Year of the Rural, actually, because we have a GIS layer. And, you know, even if there's just a horse in a field, it is preserving the potential for agricultural use. So food, fiber, and, you know, forests. We used to be the number one producer of Christmas trees in the nation. Shelton takes credit, but Kitsap actually had more tree farms. And so, you know, it's all part of preserving those working landscapes. Any other questions?
Thank you so much for the presentation. Picking up Kitsap Fresh every week is like the highlight of my week. So, yes, thank you so much. I was curious, so when you talk, your recommendation around preservation, what is your inner criteria for looking through that type of lens? Like, what are some of the things you're looking for?
Well, one of the things that keeps farms in farming is that they're economically viable. And so that really during the 1970s was one of the things. I mean, the farm crisis, really the root of it was that smaller parcels really were not economically viable. And we've kind of seen a sea shift now. I mean, we have a lot of people that are doing some really intensive high-value crops. I mean, we do lettuce mix, and it's $9 a pound, right? And, you know, you can do hundreds of pounds on an acre. I mean, thousands of pounds. And so, you know, there is definitely a way for you to make a living farming. But it still has to be economically viable. And so, really, economic viability is the main benchmark. So are we supporting our farms through the policies and practices? Is our ag code burdensome, or is it promoting farming? If you want to install a WSDA processing facility to butcher chickens, technically, if you're going to follow the code, you need to go and get a commercial building clearance. That requires architectural scale drawings. You have to have a plan for lighting, and because the commercial building application is geared strictly for somebody who's in a more traditional retail commercial setting. So there's some things that we need to do and massage in the ag code that could perhaps be like helpful. And you know, those are tweaks that we need to be making to make it, not saying that we don't want any sort of regulation around farming, because there's some very good reasons for farming to be regulated, whether it's food safety, whether it's, you know, ecological health. I mean, if you've got a farm and you've got 5 acres and you've got 100 head of cows on it, you're probably going to be polluting your water. So there's very good reasons for us having, you know, sideboards on some of the farming activities. But we also need to be looking at what are ways in which we're putting up barriers for farmers. So, yeah, that's any other questions or comments? Yes.
I understand they're doing some farm development in Port Gamble as well. Is that something that you guys are working in partnership with?
You know, we actually, the Farmland Preservation Coalition, met with them, and they have some really unique characteristics about the Port Gamble community plan there that allow them to do that. Some of the recommendations, we connected them with a couple of potential farmers because they were really at a position, at a place where they could connect the farmer with the land. And so we had some people that we, you know, were like aware that we're seeking land, and we're like, here, you know, we did provide them with some suggestions about, you know, you're going to be building a community there, but, you know, how much is it going to cost the farmer to live there? And, you know, so John Rose is like, well, I guess that lot belongs to the farmer. Like, okay, I guess that's, you know, so we've definitely been able to connect with, you know, a lot of different partners and opportunities. So, you know, I'm excited to see what comes of that, and, you know, because the Babcock Farm is one of our historic farms in Kitsap.
What do you think of vineyards and wineries?
They're farms.
Are they growing? Are we shrinking?
Well, you know, one of the things about our changing climate is that it is making it a little more challenging. I'm thinking about Eastern Washington. California, there's a lot of places where it's too hot to grow grapes now. And so a lot of those folks had already moved up to Eastern Washington. And now there's some places in Eastern Washington that it's too hot. So we actually have the potential here in the Puget Sound to grow some of the whites and the rosés that they can no longer grow in Eastern Washington. They can still grow the burgundies and the big reds. But, you know, that also requires you to have access to the land. And it's more of a long-term investment because your vineyard isn't probably going to be producing until it's 5 years old. And so there's a lot of folks that don't have the resources to, you know, to stick it out for 5 years. But we do have a number of vineyards in Kitsap. In fact, Betsy Wittick, who is one of the farmer advisors on the Farmland Preservation Coalition, she's got Bainbridge Vineyards. And so part of the reason she's not here is that they're busy pruning and working on the farm.
Yeah, I don't have any questions. I just want to say thank you, Diane, for giving. You're such a wealth of information and history for past and what's going on currently in the county with regards to farming and preservation, and giving us guidance on how to look at it. And so I want to thank also the DCD for allowing farmland preservation to be given some time. I know we got a lot to cover tonight, too. But I also couldn't help but look out in the audience, and we have a looks like we have Joy Garaton with us, who's the district manager at the Conservation District, which was the Conservation District of the Year in 2024. So thank you.
Yes. I would like to put in a plug. We provide farm plans at the district, but we also do a lot of other awesome stuff. And so if you need a rain barrel, give us a call because we have them. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Diane. Okay, back to the Year of the Rural and kind of the broader topics here. So a reminder of the Growth Management Act and the core concepts, and as it relates to the Rural and Resource Lands chapter, which is one of our deliverables. So three main types of land, so urban, growth-focused, dense housing, shopping, and jobs, rural, protected from growth, and large properties, rural jobs, limited commercial, and then resource, protected from all development, and includes timber, agriculture, and mining. And then the urban services, sewer, sidewalks, multifamily housing, limited to urban growth boundary, urban growth areas, urban boundaries, and then generally prohibited in the rural and resource lands. For example, sewer. And then what does that look like in Kitsap County? So many small lots, less than 5 acres, as Diane had just mentioned, in rural areas, including dense housing developments known as urban sprawl. Lower density development in urban areas without access to urban services, such as sewer. Heavily subdivided shorelines, undesignated resource lands, strong public interest in maintaining historic development patterns, and then invalid plans, so three different plans in the 90s. So when the Growth Management Act was passed in 1990, there were three iterations. That's just to say that this has been a hard process for Kitsap County. So today in Kitsap County, our urban areas include cities, city adjacent, and Silverdale and Kingston, generally 5 homes per acre minimum development, and predominantly single family development. And then in rural areas, 5, 10, and 20-acre property sizes, limited existing denser communities, Manchester, Suquamish, Keyport, and rural job areas, and then our resource lands, timber, limited to state lands, no commercial agriculture, and then, as Diane had mentioned, and mining limited to existing gravel and other pits. So some definitions as that will help us when we're looking at, for example, the rural classifications, and also just taking an opportunity to look at the zoning and land use that we're assessing with the Year of the Rural and the Rural and Resource Lands chapter update. So we have rural residential, a type of zone. So that's the density of that is 1 dwelling unit per 5 acres. And you can see that the purpose of that listed below. And then rural protection is 1 dwelling unit per 10 acres. And the purpose of that listed below. And that particular one relates to our critical areas and the protection of those, and the idea of that is a corridor. And you'll see that language in the purpose description. And then rural wooded is 1 dwelling unit per 20 acres. So the timeline of this project, December was the project charter and community engagement plan was presented to the commissioners. January was the kickoff for the project. And then in between there has been significant outreach. June of 2025, so next month, is our 30% draft. And there'll be a presentation. And this is preparing you all for that, for what's coming in June. We'll have a presentation to the Planning Commission. We'll also have a presentation to the Board of County Commissioners. And along with that, based on the feedback from the Planning Commission, we also added community workshops to that June to get feedback. So we now have 3 workshops planned. They're all scheduled, and we're spacing those out between the 3 different districts. And then we'll be focusing in on specific topics where we find great tension to get feedback from the community. In September, we're working towards our 60% draft. And that's when we go to official, so it will be fully built out, however, very flexible to receive that feedback, to move things around, to edit, to get that feedback. That month of September will be the official public comment, so receiving those will be put into a table and shared back with you. We'll work with the Planning Commission on the findings of fact. And then we'll have multiple, most likely, deliberations with the with the Board of County Commissioners as we work towards that 90% draft. And then there'll be another opportunity for public hearing with the Board of County Commissioners where there'll be opportunity for testimony, but hopefully at that time we're nearing the end. And then we're looking towards a December 2025 adoption. So that we're in the outreach phase, the initial outreach phase of the project right now. So the first, and then in your executive summary packet, there were links to these. So I'm just going over the highlights, but please feel free to look at our summaries of each of these. But what we did, and it describes the four public comment periods in the comp plan, the 2024 comprehensive plan process. And so we reviewed each of those public comment periods. To look for specifically related to rural. And we were already very familiar with it, but it helped us kind of, again, help us make sure that we're focused and in moving in the right direction when it comes to the rural and resource lands chapter. So we in there you can see an overview. Some of the topics included environmental concerns, zoning and land use. Traffic and transportation continues to be a theme that we hear about. Infrastructure and utilities. Public services and facilities, procedural and legal issues. So as related to that, it was also, you know, working to increase transparency, increase outreach. It's something that we've heard before and we're continuing to work on. Housing and growth, so that was a comment. And we continue to hear it, and you'll see in the survey slides, this tension between we need more affordable housing, but we don't want growth, and in this case, in the rural area. So I think there's real tension with that, and we know that. And then general opposition or support, and this was definitely related to the specifically, for example, some of the rural reclassifications, and you'll see that in the summary, those listed specifically. And then the rural and resource land survey summary. So that was conducted in the month of February and then also the first week of March. We had over 1,000 responses, and some of the highlights here that you'll see preserving rural character was at the top, and so we're working to, in what we'll present for our 30% draft, is what is rural character for Kitsap County. There is an RCW definition of that, but what is it then for Kitsap County? Restricting growth to rural area, restricting growth to rural areas. I don't feel like that's the right word, but improving rural transportation and safety. So this was interesting. Anytime we go out and talk to the public, we hear about traffic. But interestingly, at the same time, we heard about walkability, the lack of walkability or the lack of bicycle infrastructure in the rural area. So we see tension with that, and we also are acknowledging our scope of work, but acknowledging that tension. Support for rural compatible economic development. So a topic that has risen to the top is land use compatibility. Diane had mentioned it earlier. So when you have rural residential side by side with a business or something that's allowed that perhaps could be perceived as a nuisance, so how can we take a look at that and make sure that we have buffers or that things that are encouraged in the right place? So that is something that we're looking at with respect to the rural and resource lands chapter. Environmental stewardship was another thing brought up multiple times. And then again, government and communication with rural communities, asking for more communication and more transparency. And then you'll see in the summary, it talks about our action and potential next steps, which is the work that we're doing within the rural Year of the Rural project. Some additional overview of our outreach. We're continuing our groups and interviews and presentations with a variety of topic-specific groups. Includes agriculture. We actually have three outreach events in collaboration with KCAA, the Kitsap County Agricultural Alliance, that will be in the month of May. And there we're presenting potential goals, policies, and strategies, asking for priorities, what are the top three. And then also a part of those workshops, we'll be looking at potential code changes and what changes are a priority for you. Rural businesses, so we have a presentation with the rural business group this week to hear their concerns and feedback. Water and environment is another topic, so we're meeting with the tribes about that, and then also meeting within our own department, talking about the salmon recovery plan and where are they identifying things that overlap with the work that we're doing and how can we complement each other's work. Child care, specifically in-home daycare, is a topic that we're looking into, and a task force already exists. it's always great when a group already exists and we can tap into those expertise. So that's an example of that. Energy siting is another topic. This is an example of one that we're realizing this might be bigger than the Rural and Resource Lands chapter. So a recommendation perhaps could be that this is a separate topic, but it will be acknowledged in the Rural and Resource Lands chapter. And then several other examples of presentations and outreach and engagement that we're doing includes CAPO, North Kitsap Rotary, and the tribal partners. I mentioned the June workshops. Those now have been worked out with the dates and locations already established. And there will be an in-person and virtual option for the presentation, but then the workshop aspect will be only in-person. And then our plan for outreach for September, when we're at that 60% draft, is we are scheduled for presentations to promote that public comment period through the CACs in Kitsap County. So happy to have that organized and to be able to plug into that to promote it to as many people as possible. So a reminder of the three deliverables that we have within the Year of the Rural. I'll touch on reclassification requests here, and then the second one is the chapter, the Rural and Resource Lands chapter, and then the third one is potential code updates. So with respect to the reclassification requests, in your packet, it included a link to this map. So it's a map that you can zoom around in, and then you can also click on the layers, and then I'll have a slide in a moment that can show you the difference in the layers. But this shows where the distribution of these requests, and then just a little bit of information about kind of how we're starting to see these in buckets. So two reclassification requests were included in Alternative 2. We feel that that's noteworthy because Alternative 2, when we looked at different growth scenarios in the comprehensive plan, Alternative 2 was most similar to the preferred alternative, and that included growth in population and housing directed in the urban growth areas. And it included one is current rural protection. You know, I talked about the densities earlier, and the request is to go to rural commercial. Another one is currently rural wooded, and the request is to go to rural industrial. And then we have all others were included in Alternative 3, which that scenario included growth throughout the county rather than directing the majority of the growth, the growth into the urban growth areas. And within that, there's one rural residential request to go to rural industrial. And then the remaining 14, we are considering upzoning reclassification requests, meaning they're increasing the density. I had mentioned earlier, the majority of them are rural wooded, so that the density in that is one dwelling unit per 20 acres. And then they're either asking to go to rural protection, which is one dwelling unit per 10 acres, or rural residential, which is one dwelling unit per 5 acres. And then our process for evaluating these is included. It's described in the Kitsap County Code 2108-070. That's the criteria for recommendations or decisions, and that's what we're using to evaluate each of these applications. And then we're working towards a recommendation to update the docket in June or July. We're still in this process of what that will look like, but be prepared for us to, we'll share information about that, but then we'll be sharing that with the Board of County Commissioners in that June or July meeting for a decision. So I'm sharing two examples of the request so you can start to get a feel for it. So you can see on the right, it's circling where these two applications are, and then you can see the outline of the application. So on the left is the current zoning, and it's the density of it is one dwelling unit per 20 acres, and the proposed zoning is rural residential, and you can see how the greens shift in the zoning. And that would be to one dwelling unit per 5 acres, so increasing the density. And then here you can see the circle going down to South Kitsap. And I'll say in general, about half are in North Kitsap and the other half are in South Kitsap. And then you can see that one in the middle that is in Central Kitsap. So we are meeting with both commissioners to explain to them, you know, what this looks like, and you know, help unpacking our process with each of the commissioners so they understand within their respective districts. So on the top here, you can see current zoning, all rural wooded. So all of is that darker green, and then on the bottom you can see their proposed zoning, and the lighter green is rural residential, which is one dwelling unit per 5 acres. And then the rural protection is the one dwelling unit per 10 acres, and that is the olive green. And then the one in the more upper right, that is to go to rural industrial. So then the second of our three deliverables will be the chapter update. So the background of that, so prior to the adoption of the 2016 comp plan, so the 2010/2012 was the last time that the Rural and Resource Lands chapter was a standalone. In the 2016 and in the 2024 chapter, it was woven into the land use chapter. So now we are splitting it back out to have its own focus. So our approach is to refer to the 2010-2012 structure and outline when there was a focus on the rural and resource lands. We're reviewing the 2016 plan for what the goals and objectives were at that time. We're also reviewing the 2024 chapter. And that's also a critical part because this chapter will fit within the 2024 comp plan. So the flow has to be the same. We're acknowledging what's already, we're acknowledging what's already in it. So that's part of our process with that. So we've taken those and kind of made a Frankenstein, and now we're pulling out those pieces and then, and also identifying what's missing. We are meeting with community members and subject matter experts to ask what information do they have, gleaning data. Just like Diane said, we're working to get data from the Conservation District about those farming activities, and we're working with our data and GIS analyst on doing those assessments, but the data isn't all at Kitsap County. We're getting data from other folks to do that. Along with that, we're doing research and then analysis. We're doing the research to see, one, what are the best practices, and then also what are other counties doing. Oftentimes, we can compare that and get ideas from them and then see how would that potentially fit in Kitsap County. And then another part of our approach is iterative drafts. So we're going, and you know, we're like, oh my gosh, it's almost June. That's really how it feels. It feels like we're not ready, but we want to share it so people can see our direction. And we're not going to have it all filled out, but we want to show this is the structure and direction that we're going so that we can get feedback. And so on the right is just an example. You'll see a draft, but you'll also see holes and kind of what the work that we're doing to fill that in towards that 60% draft with the opportunity for feedback through that workshopping in June. And then with respect to code updates, similar to how it worked with the comprehensive plan, and the major goal in that was housing. So along with that, development code updates happen to increase density, increase heights in order to meet those housing goals. With the Rural and Resource Lands chapter, the focus, it's pretty broad, so we're trying to hone in on these focus areas, and these are some examples of where we're digging in a bit more. Agriculture is one of them. In-home childcare is another. Rural events is another example of where we're hearing from small businesses or from farmers of how can they be economically viable. But I also want to say that we're working to balance in all of these. For example, rural small businesses with that land use compatibility. So how does that impact the neighbors and what's most appropriate? And I will say too, when it comes to rural events and agritourism, this is a study that's being conducted across the state. And so it's been also at the same time good chatting with other counties to see what feedback they've received, how they've maybe made some changes, so we are all learning from each other. And so what's next? Continued engagement. We're looking at our list of engagements and outreaches and subject matter experts and presentations and seeing, are we missing anything? We're working on our gap analysis. So we will present in the 30% draft, here's what we have on our list that we've already conducted that and reviewed it. And then is there anything missing? But also acknowledging it can't be 100 things that we're reviewing. We have to bookend it within reason. Research, we're doing that. And then also I just had the work. So at some point, you know, we're talking and we're asking and then we got to start doing and actually crank this out and give you all something to react to. And then the 30% draft presentation will be to the Planning Commission on June 3rd. And that is my update and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Heather, so much for the update. I'll just say that I appreciate the phased approach and intentional community engagement opportunities that there are and, you know, the workshop and all those good things. So I hope those are well attended. I appreciate the work bullet point as well.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you.
Will you repeat that into the mic just so people online can hear?
Great.
Thank you.
We've been going for 2 hours. We're going to take a 10-minute break.
Okay.